Welcome to a new edition of the Capital Confidential podcast. This is Brendan Lyons, managing editor for the Times Union, overseeing the State Capital Bureau. I'm joined today by Mandy Fries and Chris Bragg, two members of our Capital team who have been following this year's elections closely, especially the unresolved state Senate and U.S. congressional races that remain in limbo due to the high number of absentee ballots that have yet to be counted. So, Chris, you have been closely following a lot of the Senate races in New York, the state Senate races, where many seats remain up for grabs, although there are, you know, some of the key races, the Republicans have the lead early out of the polls, but the Democrats are growing more confident that they can possibly win these seats back. The Republicans, meanwhile, are initiating lawsuits across the state as a preemptive strike to go after invalidating, it appears, some of these absentee ballots. And so what are some of the races that the Democrats feel they can maybe swing back their way?
Yeah, you know, before the election, Democrats controlled 40 out of the 63 seats in the chamber, needed 32 to keep a majority. They're going to do that easily. But, you know, like you said, with Trump, there was this early sense that he was winning by a lot, and then Biden came back in all these states. In New York, it might be the same thing. Democrats initially believed they'd hold a minimum of 36 seats, maximum of 44. Republicans thought they'd grow from 23 to 27, possibly 29. It looks like maybe the Democrats' estimate might turn out to be more accurate. They really have a good chance of coming back and winning in the seat that was previously held in Rockland County by David Carlucci, the Democrat there. There's a ton of Democratic and Working Families Party absentee mail ballots that came in as compared with the Republicans, and he's not down by very much. State Senator Pete Harcum in Westchester looks like he has a pretty good chance of coming back and beating a former Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino. So those are the more obvious ones. And then ballots keep coming in, and they, as long as they were received by a County Board of Elections by Tuesday, they still counted. So we don't have the final numbers yet, but it looked like in Southern Brooklyn, Andrew Gennardis had a pretty good chance, at least a decent chance of coming back, even though he had about a 5,200 vote deficit. One that's surprising to me actually is for George Amador's seat that he's retiring from. He's a Republican. Democrats might be able to pick that up with Michelle Hinchey, the daughter of former Congressman Maurice Hinchey. She was down by about 8,100 votes on election night. And there's more than an 8,000 Democratic advantage in absentees that came in terms of registration. Those obviously haven't been counted yet. John Mannion in the Syracuse area, a decent chance of coming back. So those look like the ones, you know, there's two pretty good chances of comebacks, which would bring Democrats to 38, and then three more that are possible that could bring it to a maximum probably of 41.
So Mandy, over, you know, in the state of New York this year, they did the unthinkable, which was they removed all of these rules that have been in place for decades that would enable often party bosses, party leaders to go in and invalidate absentee ballots for issues such as errant pen marks or, you know, you got your postal stamp upside down. I'm just making that one up. But it really ridiculous stuff that would have thrown out a ballot. This is the year, buoyed by COVID, but certainly in a Democratic state where they wanted to get as many votes for Biden as they could. You know, what were some of the changes we saw this year? And also, do you think that the early voting and the mail-in voting that was expanded this year might be something that sticks around, that, you know, stays, not just COVID, but is something that endures beyond this year?
I'll take your second question first, Brendan. And I'd say, yeah, absolutely. The fact that absentee ballot was expanded to essentially no excuse, with folks citing COVID as a concern and being able to receive an absentee ballot, that's probably something we're going to see in the future. It's been a conversation in New York State for some time about no excuse absentee ballots, and it just hasn't really moved because a lot of the changes need to go through multiple iterations, or oftentimes there isn't consensus among lawmakers, and so it kind of just sits around for a really long time. So yes, I do anticipate that the opening up of the ability to apply for an absentee ballot or even mail-in voting in general is going to be more likely in New York in the future. And speaking with a lot of other folks who are election reformists, they would really like to see even more changes brought to the state's election system and in regard to simply how the process is run with ranked choice voting. So I anticipate that we could see more of that as well as New York City has it and other states have begun implementing it as well. I believe Maine was the one that implemented ranked choice voting for this presidential election. So with that, your other question was in regard to some of the changes that we've seen with this election. They were all done kind of rapidly and, you know, with only a couple of months before the general election. So for local election officials, it's been really challenging to kind of get up to speed with that. Obviously, expanding the ability to receive an absentee ballot meant there were going to be far more absentee ballots to count, which is part of the reason why this is going to take a little bit longer. One of the provisions that was given was the ability for voters to cure their ballots or fix any of those issues, like the missing signature or an errant pen mark. Previously, New York has been known for a high percentage of absentee ballots being thrown out for just those reasons. So the fact that there was any opportunity now for voters to address those issues, hopefully we will see fewer absentee ballots tossed going forward, but I don't think that that will stop candidates from challenging the validity of those ballots.
And Chris, we're hearing already that that is happening, that, you know, the boards of elections have not begun counting the absentee ballots in many of these, you know, key Senate race areas, and partly because the Republicans Senate Campaign Committee has initiated legal action to set up a challenge of some of these ballots. The boards of election don't want to be accused of tampering, so they're holding off even counting those, which is going to put these races in limbo even longer. You know, I know it's like reading tea leaves, but do you think there might be any success to those legal challenges, or do you think in the end we'll see these races swing, as they called Trump, the red mirage, go back blue?
Most of what I know is from what you just said, and I just read a New York Post article on this topic where there have apparently been like 30 different challenges filed around the state in congressional races as well as state Senate races. It seems like if something's extremely close, like maybe within 100 votes or something, these things could matter more. If, like we're seeing on the national level, like in Arizona or something, it might matter more than in Pennsylvania if there's some sort of a voter fraud or something like that. But I guess just imagine if New York were competitive in the presidential race, they'd be waiting for the votes to be counted here for like, you know, another 2-3 weeks or something. And the if they actually, the fate of the country hung in the balance on New York. So I guess in that sense, we're kind of lucky that we're a deep blue state.
It's so blue, in fact, that when the polls close at 9, before the votes are even counted, they call it for New York.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. And, you know, it's worth noting that the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, have for years used the invalidation process as a weapon. They would go in and try to get races and win it by having ballots thrown out because of an errant pen mark or things that really shouldn't invalidate a ballot. And either one of you may have thoughts on this, but I wonder if the Republicans here and across the country have to start rethinking their ground game, because based on what happened this year, they've got to be thinking we can't rely on poll voting. And with or without COVID being the reason, it just seems historically that more Democrats might use absentee ballots. Maybe they need to come up with a strategy to get more of those out to, you know, elderly or other people, military, people who may not want to vote in person any longer.
You know, the point's been made that Trump railed against the Postal Service so much and against mail voting, even though he himself voted by mail, by the way, but he seems to have suppressed perhaps some of that vote, like maybe an older voter who was afraid to, you know, go out to the polls because of COVID might have otherwise voted by mail, but because the president, who they're supporting, was so negative about it, perhaps they didn't turn out. So that could have actually ended up backfiring for him. I also say, you know, in New York City, which I've covered a bit, when you're talking about ballots being thrown out, one big thing is that whatever candidate is favored by the political party bosses, and that probably applies in the other parts of the state, usually gets free help from whatever county machine is supporting them. So that's kind of a built-in advantage where you get free legal help if you're supported by the county machine, and also perhaps a favorable judge elected by the county machine, and somebody who isn't might face challenges in that kind of process you're describing about ballots being thrown out and things like that. So that can be a problem.
Sure. Petitions as well. You know, it's always been the grassroots candidates, the people just trying to get into public office without the machine support. They just get eaten. You know, they get chewed up and spit out by this machine for many years, with whether it's invalidating their petitions or invalidating their absentee ballots or just keeping them from getting on lines. And Mandy, is there anything else, you know, do you think that, what do you think boards of elections going forward, if you know this, you know, might change? I mean, it seems as though it's gone pretty smoothly so far. People had predicted it might be Armageddon in these boards of elections. Now, they haven't started counting yet, but I don't know. Do you see maybe a need for them? Did they shift enough this year to deal with this? Do you think there's more improvements that might be made in the coming years?
I would imagine yes. One of the things right off the bat is a lot of election boards underestimated how many people were going to use early voting as an option. And in many counties, you saw long lines. You know, there wasn't really much of a cure until later. Some boards decided to expand the number of hours that they were open in order to accommodate the high demand. However, I do anticipate election boards are going to need to have the conversation of, do we need more polling places when it comes to early voting? I believe in New York City, the situation was such that there were 100,000 voters registered and required to vote in one location, which is also a problem. So there's going to need to be a review of, okay, what are the best locations for early voting and maybe possibly offering more locations so that it's not such a high number of people who are likely going to go to one location.
And you know why? Because I think that if this wasn't the Trump-Biden race this year, you wouldn't have people willing to stand in those lines for 1, 2, 3 hours. So Rensselaer County, for instance, had 4 early voting polling places, and then 70 on election day. And in Saratoga County, where I reside, we had long lines at the early voting. And when my wife and I went to vote on election day, guess what? We walked right in and voted. There were no lines because of all the early voting. So I think if they do it going forward, more polling places, you know, is something they need to do. You can't make it so that people have to stand in line for hours to vote. And you saw that here and across the nation. And it just doesn't, I think without a presidential hotly contested race like this, people will not vote. We will not see that historic level again, probably either.
I think that the option for folks to be able to vote by absentee or mail-in voting also gave more options for voting for individuals. So those who were unlikely to get to the polls, simply because maybe they just don't want to go, it's easier. So maybe they're more inclined to vote if they're able to vote by mail or by no excuse absentee. So we'll have to see how that potentially shakes out as well, because that might be able to influence and encourage more folks to vote.
Right on. Well, thank you both for being here. I was joined today by Mandy Fries and Chris Bragg, who are part of our Capitol team in Albany. And they are always in a position where they have their pulse of what's going on at the New York State Capitol. Thanks for listening to our latest Capitol Confidential podcast, and please remember to subscribe to the Times Union. Thank you.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.